Cheryl.
Joined. Joined.
Morning, evening, afternoon.
Hello, Cheryl, it's Sebastian.
Hello. Hang on, and one of my dogs wishes to go out, of course. Very convenient. Hang on a second.
It's the right time.
Wanda is Cartesini.
Joined.
again. Has anyone else joined us?
Yeah. Sergio, Wanda here.
Morning, Wanda. Evening, Wanda. Now, which is it for you?
Yeah, it's evening. How are you?
Quite good. And have we got anybody else at the moment?
I believe
just Sebastian and yourself?
I believe it's just us.
Okay. Good. I was just going to say I took Rhonda back to her surgeon yesterday.
Yeah.
And he's quite pleased with the progress. She'll have another 10 days' worth of daily dressings at home, and then they'll review her at the plastic surgery clinic and start dropping down the wounds, the wound dressing regime. So I know you do think about my cousin, so I thought I'd let you know
yeah.
that she's definitely on the improve. A long and slow fight, but on the improve. And she's able to drive her car now, so that's
good.
Good.
Joined.
Good.
Hello.
Would you join?
How are we all?
Who has joined?
It was Alan, wasn't it?
Alan did a while ago.
Yep.
Okay.
So I know I've got Sebastian, I've got Wanda,
yes.
I've got Alan. Well, we're very prompt.
Somebody yeah. else just came on, but we don't know who.
Who just joined us?
We don't know. Maybe nobody.
Okay.
We were interrupted by the automatic voice. But
oh, well, what we need is a Liz and a Milton.
How long are we expecting this to be?
I wouldn't think terribly long because it's really a preamble to what we need to do in Cairo. Although that said, with the logistics of Cairo, the more we can do in a half hour or so this morning, depending on what people need to take back to their constituencies. This was really, I think, driven by Liz's approach to me via email, saying that she'd got the Guernsey to be the lead for the business constituency on this transition modelling, and she wondered if she and I could have a chat. And, of course, as you all know, I only chat as a team when I'm doing it for us.
It would be nice if the first thing that happens is she tells us why we're involved with the business constituency in this particular event.
Because of the user house.
Well, I understand that, but it was phrased as the business constituency, not the user house.
Yeah.
Oh, well, she's simply been allocated from their space.
Okay. Nevertheless, I'd like to hear that. As such, I have about a half an hour, but not a lot more.
Not a problem. I'll just send an email to both of them asking, are they joining us?
I don't know if you see the mail exchange between Matthias and Milton.
Left.
Who is that?
A spy.
Who is that?
Who left?
Somebody left, but...
Go ahead, Sebastian. We've still got Wanda and Alan here, haven't we?
Yeah. It's just to say that I just see a mail sent by Matthias, because I guess he received a mail from Milton who were unhappy with the fact that...
Joined.
It was too short notice and that he have no phone, and Matthias were asking him to give the phone number to call him, but I don't know if he reply, and it was just 1 hour ago or even less. And I don't know what is happening with Milton. But what it's more important, it would be great to have Milton, but I guess the first idea was to have discussion with Liz, and it could be just Liz with Alak.
if Liz joins us, that is fine. I haven't got that email yet. What did it say about too short a notice?
Milton writes,
1 hour.
Just some observation. Generally, it's a bad idea to give people less than 24 hours notice of an important conference call. 2, this conference call service cannot be called from a prepaid mobile phone. So if I am to participate, I have to stay in my office until 23 hour or so.
Danny.
No.
Joined.
Hi, Danny.
Hello. Just thought I'd listen in today. So far, there's nothing to listen into.
I was going to say, what we're listening to is is it Milton who may be not able to join us?
Yeah.
And Liz doesn't seem to have joined without an explanation. By the way, I was dropped off on summarily, but I'm back in now.
Okay. Ah, I did wonder who was coming in and out. Yeah.
Milton Mueller.
Joined.
Hi, Milton. I'm just emailing Liz because she seems now to be the only one missing in action.
We just got an email from her. I think she thinks that the call was an hour ago, like I did. And somebody should just send her an email, tell her that it's just starting.
I'm doing that now. Is there daylight saving changes in your
not
part
yet.
Of the world?
No, it's in October, but I guess the difference is that, we put the UTC time, but it may be different from one country to another.
UTC should not be different from one country.
By definition, UTC should not be different, but one's interpretation of it might be.
Yes, Alan, you're right. That's the interpretation. No, it's the real time. For each country, it's different in UK than in Europe.
Yeah, which is why we only ever work in UTC, because it's way too confusing, particularly at this time of year where some of us are starting daylight saving and some of us are ending daylight saving.
Some people assume that UK time is UTC time, which...
Yeah.
That's a mistake I made.
Well, as soon as Liz joins us, that will be good. At the moment, Milton, we have obviously myself, whose dulcet tones you should recognise by now, Alan, whose dulcet tones I'm sure you recognise by now, Sebastian, Vanda, and Danny Younger has dialed in.
Okay.
So the minute Liz arrives, we're off.
Milton, why can't you get to this from a prepaid phone? Don't they allow toll-free calls?
I guess they don't. Probably they have to pay some kind of mobile termination rate, and they don't want to lose money on the deal. But all I know is that when I called the number from my mobile, I got a very long explanation in Dutch, which I don't understand.
Well, that is inconvenient. The other thing was, I don't know whether, because I haven't actually received that last email. For some reason, it takes email a long time to get to Australia sometimes. We've never worked that one out. Would have thought it was no slower than anywhere else in the world. But we can always organise a call out to a phone. And you can, I thought Matthias actually put that link into the email.
Sorry, we just received the mail from Milton and one from Lee saying that she has a family emergency. But maybe I will try to call her at home from Paris. It will be less expensive than from other countries.
If you could, that would be great. Thank you, Sebastian.
I will do that. Then I will be off
never
for a
second.
Again.
We can always get the Adigo call people to dial out to any phone. And you can actually log that yourself online, so you don't have to share private numbers with everybody. You can just tell Adigo.
Good to know.
So Do we have an agenda?
Well, this, or, as I was just explaining, Milton, to the rest of the Exco, that when Liz emailed me and said, I've got the Guernsey to do this, and perhaps I should talk to you, I said, well, that's fine. Feel free to talk to me, but if you talk to me, you talk to the executive. and if you're talking to the executive and me, seems silly not to invite Milton, seeing as we'll all be saying the same things again in Cairo. And I thought it might be a method of us at least having a quick round of what our first thoughts and overriding sort of the high-level principles are. So many of us have committed concepts to paper, but if we can make our time more valuably used in Cairo, when, as you know, we're very pressed for time again, I think having this call would be well worthwhile.
Perhaps Milton can clarify, do you know, is Liz working just for the business constituencies, I presume all three of them, or is it the user house?
She's just working for the business side. I think she's a member now of the business constituency. And I think she was asked by them to contact.
Really, this is really the BC, not even the commercial house.
I couldn't be definite about that, but that
okay.
It is a.
So my question pops up being operable again.
Hmm.
Why does she want to talk to us?
Right. I mean, I think the interesting issues are how we form the non-commercial side of the house. And I think the working group came up with a pretty clear notion of what the user side of the house is and does. And then we've got these six, we know how many seats we have now, right?
Uh-huh.
So I just wondered, I mean, I'm certainly, there's so much uncertainty surrounding this that I'm eager to have this call, don't get me wrong,
yeah.
But I just wondered if there was any specific issue that we needed to...
You apparently don't know any more than we, and we know nothing.
No, let me assure you that seeing as I'm just looking at all I've got is, it, she says, from the BC. So
okay, so it may actually be the BC, not the commercial stakeholders group.
Yep. She's the liaison person for the GNSO charter team from the BC, quote unquote.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
Okay.
I would be surprised if the commercial users had organized enough to designate a liaison as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Are we looking towards that happening, however, during Cairo, if not before, Milton? Do you know anything on that front?
Not at all. I should have just... initially, Liz just said, why don't you call... why don't we talk, you know, bilaterally?
Yep.
That would have been pretty easy to arrange. And
Milton, unfortunately, it might be pretty easy to arrange in your constituency and in Liz's, but we're very sensitive out here in the at-large community, and one of the things we've been one of the many things we've been firmly criticised for over the years is individuals speaking on behalf of the massed millions, which is why, with me in the chair at least, if you're talking to the ALAC, you're talking to the EXCO, because that gives you, in fact, and of course in the case of today, the liaison in the particular area, which is why Alan, I don't know why we don't just put you on the executive list, because I'm nearly always lately with this GNSO work just typing EXCO and Alan.
Just what I needed, being on another list. Thank you.
Yes.
But it is very important, because what this brings, of course, is the global diversity. You've got Europe, Latin America, Asia Pacific and North America. We haven't managed, although we could have had Hauber in today, she hasn't called, but she is part of the executive team, so that does bring in Africa.
Milton, maybe...
I've balanced the sensitivities, and I guess that's part of what we need to look at in this next model, in terms of a global representation. What's the NCUC take, if I can sort of start talking before...
Could I ask a question first?
Please, go ahead, Alan.
Milton, to your understanding, other than depending on how selecting the chair turns out and selecting board members turn out, are there any actual functions for the user side of the house? That is, are there any formal interactions that the commercial and non-commercial stakeholders groups have to have with each other other than possibly those two, depending on what the rules are?
Excellent question.
No, that's my understanding is that that's pretty clearly set out in the, the blueprint.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk and be friendly and do whatever we want, but I don't think there's any other formal requirements for coordination other than possibly those two.
Right. And there was a time at which we thought we might have to work out the number of seats.
Yeah.
But that was thankfully decided for us by the board. And so really, it's, like I say, the interesting issues are really what the what shape the non-commercial side of the house takes.
Yep.
And that's why I put a lot more emphasis on our meeting with ALAC, and I tried to separate it from the meeting of the user house as a whole.
It would be interesting what's happening on the non-commercial side, assuming they are planning for the possibility of additional constituencies. Right now they have 3 and 6 seats, and it's sort of a no-brainer how they're going to allocate their seats. Be interesting to understand if they are actually thinking about what happens in the future as that number grows, is not divisible into 6, and the constituencies may have
competing
very competing interests.
Well, that's what we're discovering now is the lunacy of tying council seats to constituency recognition. It's just, as I've been saying again and again, it becomes a zero-sum game, a power struggle, in which essentially everybody loses, and what we need to do is just detach the idea of a constituency from a specific number of seats on the board and have essentially plenary voting within stakeholder groups.
You mean seats on the council?
Seats on the council, yes, sorry.
It's Sebastian. Just to tell you that I just reached Liz, and she will call us in just a second, the time that she call, and she will be with us.
Excellent. Half of my half hour is gone, though. I'm not sure the rest of you.
You haven't asked some very important questions, though.
No, I understand. I'm just pointing out that from my perspective, I have to leave in a little while.
Understood.
I don't know about other people's.
Is there another matter you'd like to raise? Because until Liz arrives, we're really having a preamble to our own ALAC NCUC meeting.
Well, I don't really want to raise the issue right now, but sometime before Cairo, I'd like to know whatever the current NCUC non-commercial stakeholders group thinking is, so it's not just presented to us and
Liz Williams
asked to react.
That was what we wanted to do in Cairo, was basically say, here's what we're thinking.
I'd like to hear some summary of it or see some working.
Well, I have a document I could send you.
Yeah.
I could send you tomorrow or tonight if I can keep my eyes open long.
Yeah.
That would be marvelous, Milton. That would be excellent. I appreciate that greatly. Just send it to this list and to the people that have been on this call, and Alan and the EXCO will forward that, and we can then establish a faster set of responses, so we can perhaps do a little more in the little time we have in Cairo. Hi, Liz. I hope the family emergency isn't.
Oh, guys, I'm really sorry. It's completely my fault. Completely my fault. I've got broken fingers. No, I haven't got broken fingers. Tyler has got broken fingers from hockey injury, so I'm so sorry. I've only just been able to get back home and get organised.
Oh, poor thing. All right, I'll feel miserable for you in empathy later.
Thank you.
Alan has about 10 minutes left on this call. We can go a little longer. Just to let you know, we have the ALAC Expo, as I explained to Milton. It's very hard to just talk to Cheryl. You have to talk to the executive because we have to get a global view in. And Liz, you're used to me being a pedant, so you know that's the problem.
No. Oh, gosh. No.
Just to let everybody know, Liz and I bludgeoned the domain name industry code of practice as the consumer representatives amongst all the industry many years ago, didn't we, Liz?
Yes, and just quickly, and I'm sorry, Milton, first of all, I'm apologizing to you because I know that you were held up and getting locked out of a building. I understood what was going on. To me, this little collection was about establishing an information exchange, of seeing what everyone was up to, just to make sure, from the BC's point of view, that we had ALAC talking to us and NCUC talking to us and that we're all on the same wavelength. Perhaps not tonight that we got anything done, but that in the future we had a quick channel to discussing an effective transition to a new structure.
Thanks for that, Liz. I'm sure we're all in agreement there. Milton, did you want to respond to that?
I kind of missed it. I was just entering my home, so... Something I heard Liz say about a new structure.
Milton, I'll say it again. The purpose for me was to make sure that there was, from the BC's point of view, some kind of sensible and immediate discussion about what was happening towards the new structure, because it involved everybody. And continuing with that was that my view, my personal view, and then I've said this many, many times in the BC, was that there was enough time spent on discussing the past and that to discuss how we move to the future as quickly and as efficiently as possible was the most important piece of the puzzle.
Oh, okay. Well, heck no, I don't agree with that. I think we should go straight backwards, Liz.
Why?
Why? When we can go in a circle. Liz, I have a question. It's Alan. Obviously, it's to everyone's advantage to communicate and tell people what are going on and when the situations are appropriate to work together. My understanding is that until we know how the chair is going to be selected and how board members are selected, there's not really a lot of formal interaction between the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group. Am I missing something, or does that go along with what your understanding is?
To me, that certainly does not go along with where I think things should be going, because this is not about a division of board seats and a division of council seats. It's a much broader structural way of thinking about how work gets done. Any carve-up... And I'll declare an interest here. I'm now on the nominating committee, and my broader interest is about ensuring that we get the best board members and the best CNSO council members,
of course,
whatever that is, as possible, and my first meeting is in Cairo later on in November. So there's a double-headed sword here. I don't believe at all that the only discussion point is about the way in which we should carve up membership and population of a board or population of a council, because that is the minutest piece of a broader work agenda that should be taking place. And I would be very, very disappointed if the discussion between BC, ALAC and NCUC was only constrained to discussion about elections and who's going to sit in what spot.
No. What I said is that other than the selection of the council chair and the board members, which is to be determined by the board, and we don't know the rules at this point, I was asking what other formal interactions are there within the current structure that you understand. And
sure. I think that, well, first of all, a question back to Milton and to Cheryl and to you is that what do you think the Board Governance Committee is going to say? My thought is that they're going to say, oh, dear folks, go away and come up with what you want.
This
is Milton. Or maybe since Alan helps in, you have to leave. Maybe we should let you talk.
Yeah.
I'm not really trying to second-guess the board at this point. They may well do that. They've punted before and said, send it back and do it. And in other cases, they've simply made some decisions. I don't know what they're going to do at this point. And to be honest, I'm not sure having a plan in place, in case they do that, I'm not sure that's a good use of my time right now or our time. So I really hadn't considered that, to be honest. I'm blindly working on the assumption that they will decide, they will make a decision. They've asked enough penetrating questions to indicate that they may well make a decision, and I wasn't trying to second-guess that, those two particular issues at this point.
Milton, you had something else to say?
Yeah, Liz, so you have been appointed to the NOMCOM by the business constituency?
Not appointed, Milton, elected.
Okay.
There's a big distinction.
All right.
You are their delegate, which I believe is the formal term.
Thank you.
And the victory, the Nixon victory sign. Okay, well, never mind. So, anyway, you're probably trying to figure out what the heck, as a nominating committee member, you're going to be... What are you going to be doing for the GNSO, right? You're saying, are we going to be appointing a chair? Is that...
No, absolutely not. That is not the case at all. The decision about how the GNSO chair is appointed, and again, if we're having an all-cards-on-the-table view, my view is that we go for the best chair we can get, and that chair is appointed via an election process that anyone is open to nominate for, and that there's no assumption at all that nominating committee members are appointed as a de facto chair by virtue of their appointment as a nominating committee member. So to me, what I'm looking for is good chairs, and I've worked with good chairs, and I know what they look like, and I want more of them, and they don't necessarily come out of the nominating committee process. And so I'm a nominating... Now I'm a person who's responsible for, in the aggregate, appointing 5 board members and a number of people to the GNSO and a number of people to the CCNSO. That's about getting quality into a process that some people think is cruel and broken and stupid and not transparent and whatever, but we're working with what we're working with. So that was me just saying... There are, just in case you guys weren't aware that I was now a member of the nominating committee, that was what was going on.
But that's not the hat you're wearing in this meeting.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. This is a very much an information exchange hat that says, how's everyone going on establishing a commercial users constituency? And how's everyone going on establishing any other kind of stakeholder group or constituency or whatever to make sure that we have the most diverse representation possible and that it's consistent and the rules are applied consistently and that funding, frankly, that funding is applied consistently to make sure that everyone's work can get done properly.
Liz, this is Danny.
Oh, hi, Danny. How are you?
Oh, fine, thank you. Just as a point of information, we have as an agenda item on the North American NARALO monthly meeting whether the NARALO will consider applying for constituency status within the non-commercial stakeholders group. And we'll be kicking this around on Monday.
Cool. No comment, but great. You know, that's fantastic.
A wise move.
What, the no comment part of it?
Yes.
For the first time in my life. Yay, excellent. No comment. I talked to Philip this afternoon about what the BC expected to get from these kinds of exchanges, and I think that the most important piece that we had agreed was that everybody was, as much as possible, able to talk to each other. And I think that that's a really important piece of the puzzle, because if we don't, then the board are going to impose a structure and impose systems and impose policies and impose whatever if we don't talk to each other.
To what extent has there been any discussion and or agreement between the constituencies and the commercial stakeholders group as to how they are self-organizing?
None
yet, okay.
None, absolutely based.
Can we assume that's going on in parallel, or will?
It is absolutely going on in parallel, just so that everybody knows what's going on. The BC group has come together and said we have what's called a charter transition group, and I'm responsible for the ALAC-NCUC thing, mostly because I knew Cheryl and you, Alan, and I can talk to Milton on the same time zone. So that was easy for me to do, so I volunteered to do that. George Kirikos and Rick Anderson and somebody else who I can't remember are responsible for liaison with the registrars, registries, ISPs and IP guys. So everybody's coming together, and what's going to happen with the BC thing is that you all report back after this series of conference calls to say, oh, well, we think that the ALAC guys and the NCUC guys are heading in this direction, and this is what we're doing, and this is how we could work together, and this is what's going to happen, la, la, la. So no more serious than that, and very, very slow.
Okay, well, again, I'm pretty sure that Philip and some board members, and frankly anybody who thinks about it for very long, agrees with me that while we do want new constituencies, as I said before, we don't want constituency recognition to be tied to a specific number of council seats. So that's something for you, Danny, to take into consideration when you start talking about making the Narelo into a constituency. Another thing to take into account is whether this dual role is something that the ICANN board will accept. I'm sure that Alan and Cheryl have some opinions about that.
I think it comes on the heels of prior discussions on the part of the IPC to form their own advisory committee. And we may, in fact,
I'm sorry, I don't know what the IPC is. Can you define your acronym?
I assume it's intellectual property constituency. No,
that's what I was thinking of.
Okay.
Yes.
So the intellectual property constituency has formed an advisory committee, which, in the term advisory committee,
they haven't formed it, Milton. They have had discussions on the possibility of transforming their constituency into a advisory committee as opposed to a constituency structure. I don't know how far they are along in their discussions, but I do recall that in Los Angeles already they had been talking about that.
Danny, it says here, what does that mean? What's the distinction, just to be stupid about it?
Well,
it's a huge distinction. A advisory committee is outside of the GNSO and would have to be recognized in the bylaws and given specific powers. For example, the governmental advisory committee has a very specific set of powers, and the at-large advisory committee has a very specific set of roles. For example, it elects a certain number of people to the nominating committee and so on.
So, Danny, did you have a different view from Milton?
No, but I'm seeing a future reality in which certain groups may function jointly as advisory committees and have members that participate in that body continue to participate in a constituency environment within the GNSO.
I've given my opinion that I don't think that dual role is going to be acceptable to the community or to the board, but we can wait and see how that plays out.
Just for the record, I want to say that I'm not on principle against dual role as long as constituency recognition is not tied to council seats, because really dealing with the same people, just shuffling themselves around, and when you tie things like that to specific number of votes on the council, then you're getting into all kinds of power games. And when the same people decide that they're going to wear one hat if it gets them 3 votes, and they're going to wear another hat if it gets them a voice in the nominating committee, and they're going to wear another hat if it gets them some votes in the CCNSO or something like that, then you have, a kind of an unhealthy situation. And I think ICANN badly needs to stabilize these structures and make them sort of more fair and open, but not start letting people shuffle themselves around and wear different hats depending on how many votes or how much power they want.
Milton, as real as that issue is, I think right now we have enough problem trying to figure out how the GNSO works to not try to fix ICANN's global problems. And right now, the Board Governance Committee proposal, which we've ended up adopting, saying that there will be stakeholders groups with a fixed number of seats and a variable number of constituencies, where that variable number could, in theory, become significantly larger than the number of seats, has created a situation where how one decides how the vote, how the seats on council and the votes cast in council get reflected back on the constituencies is going to be a really difficult problem, and that's true for any of the stakeholders groups. But I think each of us are going to have to address it, perhaps in our own way. That's a real problem given to us by the model, which has been accepted. And I don't think there's any answer. I'm not proposing one way over another in addressing that problem, but it's a real problem.
I agree. It's an issue, and I think we've solved it. We have a plan that I'm going to send you in a few minutes. It's a sketch. It's not a complete plan, but again, I think the solution is very simple.
Well, when you send it, we'll look at it.
Look forward to that, Milton.
Milton, can I just ask a question on elections and on whatever? Because I'm sort of out of the loop on the NCUC's, well, the old NCUC as opposed to the new one, can you tell me what you meant by the election of six people and three being seated and three not, and what's going on with that whole process? Because I didn't understand it.
I have to drop out at this point, but I look forward to seeing whatever comes out of this meeting. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Go ahead,
right.
Alan.
Let's talk about the commercial stakeholders group just because it's an easier one. Okay, you've got six seats on the GNSO Council, and right now you have three constituencies. So presumably those three constituencies are going to give each other two votes each, or two positions each on the council.
Well, why are you presuming that, Milton?
It doesn't matter. The point
Well, actually, it does matter. That's the whole point of discussing it, because there is no presumption at all that the ISPs would be part of any business constituency, number one. Number two, Alan has just pointed out, or whoever it was, no, I think it was Danny, pointed out that the IP guys have a different view about how they might want to manage their interests. So that leaves us with a broader business constituency that is as yet unformulated. And I wasn't asking that question. I was asking about what the NCUC were planning to do.
Oh, well, that's not what you asked, but that's what I'll answer if that's what you want to hear. In our case, we don't have three pre-existing constituencies. We are more like the registrars and registries. Our stakeholder group at the moment is conjoint with a single constituency. And we think that rather than saying, okay, we're going to have two more constituencies, and they're all going to have a fixed number of votes on the council, which just encourages subgroups to form in order to get more votes on the council. It doesn't encourage anybody to go out and get new members and encourage new participation. We think that the council seats should be elected in plenary by all member organizations or individuals of the stakeholder group, and that the process of forming a constituency should increase your representation within the executive committee of the stakeholder group, should increase your opportunities to file policy statements in working groups and to participate in working groups, but it shouldn't in any way be tied to the number of seats on the council. It's very simple.
No, it's not. No, it's not, because, you know, I pride myself on being a fairly switched-on person, and if you would just say it one more time, then that would be helpful to me, because what I heard was, if you could, and now I'm being crude, if you, not you, the royal, not you individually, but if one could organize a number of seats on the council, then you could in some way increase your representation by volume rather than by number.
By volume? I don't understand what you're saying now, sorry.
Well, if you're just saying if you elect six and we think we've got enough people to elect in plenary, we'll snow you into giving you more votes in a system where one would normally have, in the NCUC's case, two or three. But if you think you can allocate by volume six seats, then you should have more say on the council. Is that what you're, in crude terms, is that what you're arguing?
I still don't understand how you're putting this. Let's put it this way. If there's a non-commercial stakeholders group, organizations and individuals who qualify for that should join the non-commercial stakeholders group, and they should have all have the same voting rights with respect to council seats. Now, whether they are grouped into a constituency or not is a completely different question. This linkage between council seats and constituencies is an artifact of the old structure, and it doesn't really work in the new structure. If you want new constituencies and encourage people to group themselves in new and different ways, you cannot link the concept of a constituency to a specific number of seats, because every time a new constituency is formed, you will have to subdivide the council seats. And that creates all kinds of obvious problems. For example, let's say five people succeed in getting themselves declared a constituency, which, you know, when it comes to Narelo, that's pretty much what you're talking about. You're talking about, you know, 10 or so at most active people. Now, if they get themselves declared as a constituency, can they then demand the same number of council seats as another constituency that has 40 organizations and 30 individuals?
Okay,
yeah, but Nelson, let's be honest. You've got, what, 5 to 10 active members yourself? I mean, you know, let's put the cards on the table.
Yeah, Danny, that isn't the purpose of the call.
Oh,
we're not having a pissing competition, but I'm very... interested now, having heard that explanation. We're looking very much at value of a proportional representational model or otherwise.
That's what I'm much more interested in understanding. And that's what I didn't understand from Milton's initial discussion. And so Milton, just a supplementary question, if I may, is your understanding of the constituency model in the new structure one that says there could be a self-forming constituency within the non-commercial group or the commercial users group that would have groups of people forming in a birds of feather environment, or
exactly.
that directly translates to council representation?
No, it doesn't. It translates to the right to form, to make policy statements that go into the process. It translates into a seat on the executive committee of the overall stakeholders group.
I've got it now. I'm understanding the nuance of what you're trying to get to. And so if I understand what you're thinking about, then, is that you're looking for a more diverse voice of people who are able to submit policy positions that don't require consensus.
Right, among the whole group, exactly.
Yep. So to my mind, that is not a silly position to take. It makes consensus at the end of the process a bit more difficult, and it makes, for example, in the non-commercial sort of side of the house, don't you think that's quite a hard barrier to get to?
Well, that's why you have the council seats. Anything that's going to become consensus policy has to go through the council, ultimately.
Yep.
And that means that you elect your council members according to, you know, an equal voting formula. So that it doesn't matter whether I'm a member of constituency X, Y, or Z.
Yep.
Milton Mueller, as you know, Syracuse University, has the same voting power in electing council members. So presumably the distribution of council perspectives will reflect somehow the strength of different views within the stakeholder group as a whole. And,
I like where the discussion is going, and I just wonder if we could just extend it one more little bit. Because what we're seeing is the ISPs absenting themselves from the commercial users discussion because they think they're somehow different. And if Alan's, or whoever it was that was describing the IP guys, they're also absenting themselves from the commercial users discussion because they don't presumably believe that their views would be taken into account on balance.
No,
and I wonder if what you're describing fixes that or exacerbates it.
I think it, in the case of the business users, I think it it would actually mollify some of those concerns. I wouldn't say it fixes them.
Yeah.
But what it says is that, okay, IP people, you go out and get a lot of your organizations to join the commercial stakeholders group and to participate in working groups. And you will elect people to the council, and you will have some kind of gatekeeper role over what policies get passed. But I guess I'm having a bit of cognitive dissonance here because my understanding is that BC, ISPs, and IP voted together 89% of the time in the past. And if
frankly, that's not the point.
Yeah.
That is not the point looking forward. And this is a point about, this is a discussion about what one could expect in the future. This is a transition discussion. And what I'm trying to understand is where everybody sits. So the fact that they may, like the registrars and registries, always voted in the same way, or the NCUC and whomever voted whichever way they chose on a particular given day, is not important. What's important is thinking about the way in which practical ways of working at a very baseline level at a working group. So how would a working group come together of disparate views and objectives in, for example, a new Who Is task force? Would we get the same old, or would we get something that approximates something different? Now, my view is that we ought to be encouraging different ways of thinking and different ways of finding agreement and points of agreement, not disagreement. And I'm trying to understand in a new constituency structure, when it's clearly going to be imposed upon the group, is, and frankly, the business constituency can never force the ISPs to come into our camp. We can never force the IPC guys to come into our camp. We have to offer them collectively a way of being that represents, that allows the representation of very diverse issues to sit within a broader group. Otherwise, they will, not surprisingly, make a petition to form their own group, and they should do that.
But they already have their own group.
I'm looking for ways to understand how, leaving aside the registrars and registries, because that's a different issue, how commercial and non-commercial fits together. And frankly, the discussion between NCU and ALAC coalescing together is far more interesting to me than whether the ISPs or the old BC or the old IP guys come together, because that's a much, to me, and in my analysis, a much more homogenous group, perhaps, that would come together. And I don't quite see how it's going to happen yet.
Which is a much more homogenous group?
The BC group is more homogenous than the ALAC NCUC group.
Yes, when I mentioned the 89%, that's sort of what I was saying, but go ahead, let Danny talk.
Actually, Sebastian. I think that was Sebastian that wanted to speak.
Go ahead, Sebastian.
First of all, Liz, just take care of, I will not speak on behalf of Vanda, but take care of myself. I am not from the other side of the world, and I don't speak Australian as well as Cheryl. Just take care of us, because the English at midnight.
Sebastian,
quite
I'm sorry.
No,
I apologize.
That's okay, but it's just to tell you that.
Excusez-moi.
Yeah, pas de problème. I have two points. You know, everybody of you know that I used to participate to the business constituency at the beginning of my start to follow what was happening within ICANN, and a big change came with the cross-constituency meeting. And I think if there are not a single voice for the three constituencies, they used to work together. That's a big difference with what could happen within the future non-commercial stakeholder group, because there is just one constituency today, and if they are to have new ones or new participants in this part of the structure, they will have to learn how to work together. And you have also to take into account that it's difficult to compare everything, because in one hand, we can imagine that the three commercial constituencies will wish to still work together and inside the stakeholder, commercial stakeholder group. And ALAC is not in that discussion to be part of the stakeholder group, non-commercial stakeholder group. We are here as ALAC to help the transition, to help the creation of non-commercial stakeholder group. And we are not saying that we want to have two seats, to elect two seats or three seats at the GNSO Council. We don't care of that. We want to be sure that the voice of the end users are broader than it is today. It's not to say that it's not existing within the current GNSO, but it's we think that the reorganization of the GNSO must take that into account in a broader level. And we are here just to help this creation or this transition and to have this voice heard more clearly.
Very important points. Exactly what we've said in each of our written representations, but we do need to ensure, Liz, that the business community remember the ALAC is not desiring to be part of a GNSO constituency. We wish to have a broader end-user input. We believe we can facilitate the right sort of people and groups joining into this new model. But there is a real separation between our role as an advisory committee and what some of our, perhaps some of our member organisations, but more likely in my personal view, organisations that are internationally recognised peak bodies who are not part of ALAC can be encouraged into this mix.
Cheryl, can I just ask a supplementary question then?
Please.
If you don't mind. One of the issues that I've got with my broader commercial user groups is that they see a conflation between ALAC and the NCUC. Now, what I just heard was, if I've got it correct, is a much more facilitation, engagement, broader steering role rather than what I think Milton is talking about, which is a active policy discussion, voting, down and dirty, gritty stuff. Is that the correct thing?
We're interested in getting the the right people in the expanded mix that Milton's more focused views are on. The ALAC per se is not interested in being involved, but rather as being a grandfather, a facilitator.
Right. Okay. That is a really, really, really important point that I need to go back to the guys and say, look, you know, you're missing the point here, and I haven't got the nuance of it yet. In practice, though, Cheryl, just to continue, sorry, to ask you more dumb questions. In practice, what does that mean in terms of who would participate in working groups or discussions or voting or anything? What does that actually mean to you? Because does it mean the ALAC becomes a voting member of council, not an advisory member?
My God, heaven, that's the most awful thing I could have possibly conceived of. No.
There we go.
I'm here with my hands crossed in front of the phone going, no. Our role as ALAC is as an advisory committee to the board. We have very particular regulations and requirements. We want to be totally hands-off to GNSO as such.
But let me add something here, and it's important for you to understand, Liz. ALAC is a receptacle for certain groups and individuals who are interested in ICANN-related policies. And the reason it has to hold a cross up in front of the phone when mention of becoming part of the GNSO is because its mandate is supposed to go beyond GNSO and include all of ICANN. At the same time, anybody who's interested enough in ICANN to get involved in ALAC might also be interested in being part of the GNSO. And there are many individuals, maybe at the moment, well, Danny is an example, okay? For a while, he was the NCUC representative for the Internet Society of New York. So he was in NCUC, and at the same time, he was, I think, participating in the North American RALO. Now, my view is that that is a good thing. They are separate structures. The people who belong in different compartments of ICANN should be able to flow into those compartments as long as the structure is set up in a way that doesn't allow it to be gamed. And let me also add that this is not just about the non-commercial side of the house. There are a lot of people in ALAC, and I think of Brett Fawcett or maybe even Sebastian, who are really, if they were to join, might feel more comfortable in the commercial side of the house as independent consultants or something. And so those people should also be encouraged to get involved in one of the commercial constituencies or the commercial stakeholder group if they want to.
Okay. I've got it. And I'm sorry that I'm exposing all kinds of prejudices and preconceptions, but I think that it's really important that we understand where respective parts of the organisation are coming from. Cheryl, if I could ask you one more question.
Certainly.
When is the ALAC up for review?
We're mid-review right now.
So do you expect the result of just putting your finger in the wind, do you expect that review to come up with a different role for ALAC?
No, I do not.
Okay, fine.
I don't think so.
Oh, hi, Vanda.
Hi.
How are you?
Sorry for me.
I heard that Brazilian voice.
Yeah, that is.
So that gets me right back to now understanding that there's a separation between, and a clear distinction between what the ALAC might want to do and what the NCUC as a broader non-commercial small N, small C group might wish to do. Because I think there's a misunderstanding on our side about where the overlap is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing I'm going to write back to the guys and say, okay, I understand from these guys that they're making a very clear distinction between what the ALAC's role is. They're making a clear distinction between what, and Milton, I'm using, I haven't used your words yet, but I would like to, a revised, reviewed, expanded, bigger, better, stronger, whatever, Citius, Altius, Fortius, NCUC might look like, and that the commercial users group doesn't have to worry about that too much, as long as we understand what, I think the key piece of it is Milton's thing about the weighted input into policy positions that would somehow translate into council seats. That's the circular logic of it for me.
Okay. Milton, did you want to respond to anything Liz has raised? Is she taking away...
Am I getting it right is all I'm asking.
Exactly. Is she taking away the right message?
I have discussed this with, so I know, I don't know that we agree on everything, but I know that he understands that tying council seats to constituency formation, to new constituencies, is a very not a good thing to do. So he understands that. And the question is, how does the commercial side of the house has a much more difficult problem because it has three pre-existing constituencies. So in some ways, it's kind of stuck with some kind of a division of the council seats, possibly. But all these this news about the other constituencies like the IP and the ISPs bolting or trying to, you know, form new structures, it's all news to me. So what I'm taking away from that is that the commercial side of the house has a similar problem in the sense that you have heterogeneity within the within the stakeholder group, and I think that the sort of plenary structure that we're thinking about in NCUC for electing council seats might indeed be helpful in your context.
Yeah, I don't think that people see it as helpful, Milton, frankly. I don't think that they see the plenary structure of electing six for the seating of three and that perhaps we might get the other three in somehow or other is actually helpful to people.
No, you don't understand what I'm saying. There's no electing of six, seating of three. There is, you know, every organization that's a member of BC, every organization of ISP, every organization that's a member of the would have a vote in the overall commercial stakeholders group.
Yep.
Just vote inside their own constituency.
Okay, that's fine. I've got it. Cheryl, I know that it's early for you and late for me, so I'd like to go to bed. Again, I apologize for the delay because it's entirely my fault, and Sebastian, I really am grateful for you calling me. Is there anything else that anyone else wanted to raise that I should be aware of?
Well, perhaps we can go around the table. Vanda, do you have something you wish to raise or say?
No, the only thing that I'd like to add that Lisa has a point. We need to have so much more scheduled debate with the non-commercial group because we certainly have joint points to address in many cases. And some of those cases, they inside the GNSO could address better. So if we establish some kind of, more often communication between us, I believe we can get the community voice more, another way to address the community voice. So that is my point. I just agree, ELAC cannot participate in that. Our role is broader than that. But we can use non-commercial as a added value for our the voice of community. And for do that, we need to have more often scheduled meetings with non-commercial to facilitate this communication. That's one point that I got from Liz when she asked about how she could listen the two voices, the communication, the conversation among members of ELAC and non-commercial units.
Thank you, Vanda. Well said and well spotted. Sebastian?
No, I agree with Onda, and we need to be sure also in this transition that there are communication between the ALAC and the non-commercial group or groups, and but also between ALAC and the commercial group. I am one who say very often that the users could be from businesses or from individuals. Sometimes they have the same issue and the same question, and they can do things together. And now with this house, I would like to see this house not just with two different groups not working together, but really one house working to be able to have a stronger voice vis-à-vis the providers. And we are, I am, and I think that at large, and I like especially is ready to work on that, on those issues with all the participants. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Sebastian. Danny, any closing comments or questions you wish to raise?
The only question that I have is, Cheryl, how do you see the ALEC facilitating ALS participation at the constituency level within the GNSO, be it commercial or non-commercial?
Well, obviously there's going to be a number of differences in the various regions. I can give you an example from my Antipodean experience, and that is that the Australian ALS, the Internet Society of Australia, has been an integral part of the formation of a new nationally organised peak body, which has been literally supported and funded by the new government, the federal government in this country. We have formed some 52 consumer interest groups into a peak body whose focus is in communication consumers. It's called the Australian Communications Consumer Action Network and has melded everything from the disability sector through to the ICT sector, all into one peak body with separate funding and grant capabilities. We're just waiting for Treasury to decide how much money we can have, and that is the type of organisation from where we would assume people would be coming into the non-commercial user stakeholders group directly into the GNSO. So you've got people who have already declared a user interest in communication consumers and then can drill down to the very specific interests of naming and nomenclature on the internet. That's an example.
Okay, so if we can draw a parallel then with other existing organizations, you'd be thinking about folks like the Anti-Phishing Working Group, the MAAWG, and others of their type as candidates for participation in the, let's call it the upper house.
The upper house, and more importantly, in the working group, which is where the real stuff happens.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand that, Cheryl. I've just been, people think that they have to be in one of these constituencies or stakeholder groups, but in fact, the working groups will be open, if I understand it correctly, and you don't need to be part of a constituency even, much less a stakeholders group, to participate in those working groups.
And that's very, very important, Milton, and I don't think that's something that we should lose sight of.
Mm-hmm.
Because that actually diffuses some of the power struggle tensions that I think we're observing.
Yeah.
Where the real work happens. going around the table, Milton, any final comments?
Well, again, I think it's been interesting. What we've been doing is a comparative analysis of how the commercial and non-commercial side are approaching these problems. But the real problems have to be resolved within each of those stakeholder groups separately, although it is very useful to have this conversation. So I'm really looking forward to our meeting in Cairo.
Yep. And Liz?
Well, I take the biscuit for all the stupid questions.
So
I don't mind that at all, because what I'm actually composing as we're thinking about this is a report back to my bunch that says, let's make sure we understand each other.
Yes.
Let's make sure we're clear about who's doing what, and let's make sure we communicate where we think we've got it wrong. And number one of those pieces is the conflation of the interest between the ISPs, the IPs, and the existing BC, and that fossilized structure going into something different. So I'm really grateful that you've all stayed up very late at night or got up very early in the morning to help me answer the stupid questions. And I'm hoping that we can all get together in Cairo. I'll be coming as part of the nominating committee caravan. But setting aside that, I think there ought to be some time of some serious thinking about how it actually works in practice. And Milton's point about the working groups is where the real work takes place is, in my long experience with doing this, the most important piece of it. And what I'd be looking for is willing workers that do sensible work and get things done efficiently and precisely, reaching a level of consensus that makes it the least intolerable position that one could come to. And whatever structure we have actually doesn't matter, because that's what the bottom line is going to be.
Indeed, Liz.
Least intolerable, least intolerable. Yeah, least disgusting chocolate, least disgusting bitter coffee, you know. So I'm really grateful. I don't expect us to have another call, Cheryl, between now and Cairo. But I would really encourage anyone who wants to ask me things, now that we all know who's doing what, to come backwards and forwards via email.
That would be great, Liz. And look, ALAC is more than happy to have offered our little Adigo call system for this role. Getting these information sharing exercises done is very important. I've learned a lot, and I think everyone has. And I'm really looking forward, and I suspect certainly the ALAC is, and I would like to believe that the large community as a whole would be very keen to work in a new partnership model, particularly if it's one that works in open communication.
Yeah, exactly.
So thank you.
Well, you can buy the beers then. That always works.
Look, darling, buying the beers, you're talking, you know, talking my language now. Thank you all. And,
all right, see you guys.
Looking forward to,
picking
up
Bye.
The sample model. Bye-bye.
Milton Mueller.
Left.
Liz Williams.
Left.
Wanda Scardesini.
Left.
Danny.
Left.
Cheryl.
Left.
Seb.
Left.